very special guest today. It is Newt Gingrich. He is a former congressman from Georgia, former Speaker of the House, and Republican candidate for President of the United States. Orchestrated the contract with America, and in 1995, he was Time Magazine's Man of the Year. And he presided over the House, the Speaker of the House, from 95 to 99, and helped author balanced budgets with surpluses for the first time in a generation. Mr. Speaker, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, I am delighted to be with you, and I think that we're talking at a very important time in American history because we have to do something to create jobs and get this economy moving again, or we're going to be in real trouble, I think, in terms of the economy potentially getting worse.
You know, I think you're right about that, and I don't know if you remember this or not, but about 5 or 6 years ago, I was fortunate enough to be seated next to you at dinner at a conference, a marketing conference in Arizona. You were the keynote speaker, and I was concerned. I mentioned it to you that Nancy Pelosi and Tom Daschle at the time were ruining what I believed America should be, and your comment was, America is too great for one person or one party to destroy. And I took
I still think that's true. Yeah, I mean, you know, we are a great country. We need to be unleashed from the bureaucrats and the class warfare. And unfortunately, we have a president who believes in class warfare and in bureaucratic socialism. And that means that he inevitably becomes the best food stamp president in American history because he destroys jobs. And he is artificially driving us towards a depression because the fact is that we have great government burdens and psychological burdens. Obama's almost the anti-Reagan. Reagan had a four-part strategy for job creation when he took over from Jimmy Carter. The economy was a mess. We had gasoline rationing, 13% inflation, 22% interest rates. We were sliding into the greatest recession since the 1930s and the Great Depression. And Reagan turned it around literally by October of 1982. The economy began to recover. He created what today would be the equivalent of 25 million new jobs over a seven-year period, dramatically expanded the size of the economy, increased revenues for the federal government, did all of that by four things, the first of which is the opposite of Obama. I mean, where Obama believes in class warfare and bureaucratic socialism, Reagan believed in small business owners. He believed in entrepreneurs. He believed in investors. He believed in the work ethic. And people felt good about it. There's no accident that Lee Greenwood did his song, which includes "I'm Proud to Be an American," in the Reagan era because it just made sense and felt right.
Tell me this. You were Speaker of the House during when we had a balanced budget and we had surpluses. As president, how do we get back to that, and how do we do it in a hurry?
Well, as president, and people can go to newt.org, my personal website, and they'll see what we're laying out. As president, I would have the same four-part plan that Reagan did. I would start with emphasizing the importance of job creation, the importance of small business owners, the importance of investors and entrepreneurs. Second, I would have a very dramatic, bold tax program. When you get 14 million unemployed and another 11 million underemployed or dropped out of the workforce, one of every six Americans is in that group. Then you have the largest number of people on food stamps in American history. You need big solutions. So my tax plan would be, one, freeze the tax rate so that there's no tax increase in 2013. Two, have a zero capital gains tax rate so that people will pour money in from all over the world to create jobs, businesses, factories in the United States. Three, reduce the corporate tax rate to 12.5%. And ironically, I say to my liberal friends, we will get more taxes out of General Electric at 12.5% than we got out of them at 35, because at 35 they hired enough tax lawyers to pay nothing. But at 12.5 they're going to fire half the lawyers and actually write a check to the government. We'd also bring home, there's $1 trillion locked up overseas of U.S. profits that they will not bring home if they've got to pay 35% corporate rate. At 12.5%, I think about $700 billion of that would show up here at home. Fourth, I would be for 100% expensing. That means if you're a factory, a farmer, a doctor, an office, if you buy new equipment, you write it off in 1 year. That would lead to the best workforce in the world with the best equipment, the most modern technology, the greatest productivity. And finally, fifth, I would abolish permanently the death tax. It is both immoral, because it's just wrong to tax somebody who spent their entire life working and saving, but it's also economically stupid. I want very successful family businesses focused on growth and jobs rather than focused on avoiding taxes and meeting with their accountants and their attorneys. So that's the tax side. The third side of this is deregulation. Abolish the Dodd-Frank bill. Frankly, the Republican House should abolish it next week, send it to the Senate, and every person who cares about small business, small banks, housing, should call their congressman and say, abolish the Dodd-Frank bill. It is killing the economy. I talked to a banker from North Georgia last Saturday morning. He says that 30% of his bank staff now works on customers and 70% work on compliance with the federal government.
Man, unbelievable.
It's crazy. So I'd also replace the Environmental Protection Agency with a brand new Environmental Solutions Agency that takes into account both the economy and the environment and that cooperates with local governments and cooperates with business. I would abolish the Sarbanes-Oxley bill, which has added huge cost at no benefit. And I would create a 21st Century Food and Drug Administration committed to taking science from the laboratory to the market, from the scientist to the patient as rapidly as possible, so that the U.S. could dominate the world market in health products, because health will be the biggest single sector of the world market. We could create millions of new jobs, very high-paying jobs, creating substantial profits by doing that. The last phase I'd have is American energy. If we created $400 or $500 billion a year of energy here at home, whether it was gas and oil offshore, or it was development of federal lands, or a variety of other steps, keeping that $400 or $500 billion every year here at home and the multiplier effect of that on other jobs would be an enormous economic benefit.
Changing gears, and I agree with all those things. Changing gears, Ronald Reagan once called the Vietnam War a noble endeavor, undertaken by noble people, and held politicians responsible for the outcome in Vietnam. Question for you, what is our legacy from 9/11? We're coming up on 9/11 here. What is our legacy? How do you see Iraq and Afghanistan unfolding?
I think that we are in a much bigger, deeper, long-term struggle than we thought we were. I think that we should have a deep strategic dialogue in this country about what we're doing and how we're going to do it. I have to say that I was one of the people who was wrong. And I was wrong in this sense. The scale of the opposition, the number of people determined to destroy us, the depth of the movement across the entire world. I mean, I think there have been 126 Americans arrested and indicted under the Obama administration for planning acts of terrorism.
Americans?
We have Americans. People, they may be first-generation naturalized citizens, or they may be native-born Americans. Remember, the Brits who a couple years ago set off bombs in the British subway were all people who had been born in Great Britain, gone to British schools, lived in British public housing. I mean, you know, this is a much more complicated war than we understood when we started. And I think that you need to look at Pakistan and raise real questions. There's no question in my mind that if bin Laden was living in a compound in a military city 1 mile from the National Defense University, substantial parts of the Pakistani government had to be protecting him. So just take that as an example.
Yeah, it's that part of the world's a complicated part of the world, and I don't know if they're ever going to be our friends. Do you?
No, you don't know that, and therefore you may have to adopt a different strategy. I mean, the correct parallel is not the Vietnam War. The correct parallel is the entire Cold War. We spent the late 1940s, we spent from 1946 to 1950 thinking through how to contain the Soviet Union, and it took a real national dialogue and coming to it. Now, you have an administration right now, the Obama administration, which is willing to call Tea Party members terrorists, but it's not willing to call terrorists terrorists. How do you design a strategy to win in the Middle East when you have an administration which won't even admit who our enemies are or the fact that they're trying to kill us?
That's a great question. Great question. Yeah, if we won't admit that those people are actually terrorists and we have a problem with homegrown terrorists, awful tough situation to fight. Question, as president, what would your cabinet look like? What cabinet posts would you eliminate? And who would your secretaries be?
Well, I think I would want to, first of all, recruit people who are committed in advance to the level of change that we need. So I think it requires defining how you're going to operate as an administration and defining what each department is going to be doing. What I tell people regularly is I'm not asking them to be for me. Because if you're for me, you're going to vote and then go home and say, boy, I sure hope he fixes it. I'm asking people to be with me because it's going to take 8 years of working every single day, reminding the Congress of what we're trying to get done, reminding state legislatures and governors what we're trying to get done. And if we shrink the Washington bureaucracy under the 10th Amendment and send power back home, we have to grow citizens at home to take up the vacuum that's being created by the shrinking bureaucracy. So I would start out, I want to apply Lean Six Sigma, which is a management system that's very powerful, that the experts on it, Michael George and others, believe could save $500 billion a year in federal cost. That's $5 trillion over a decade, three times the amount that the super committee is trying to save. I would like to, I would say to both my transition team and to my potential appointees, nobody's going to work with us until they're prepared to spend at least two full days immersed in this model, learning how to do it. And don't take these offices thinking that you're going to be having a soft time surrounded by bureaucrats who take care of you, because the job is going to be to change the bureaucracy, not just to preside over it. And so this will be a very contentious, I think very struggle-filled administration, because we're going to actually change Washington, and I expect Washington to resist. I don't think the power structure of Washington is going to give in cheerfully and say, oh gosh, you know, why don't we let Newt and the American people change us? I think there are going to be real fights over it, and so I'd want a cabinet with the courage to stand up to the interest groups and stand up to the bureaucracy and stand up to the lobbyists and get the job done.
Now, one thing that's kind of not been in the press too much lately, but I got a lot of emails on this one, immigration. Tell us your position on immigration, how you would deal with illegal immigrants that are already here, what you would do along the border.
Well, I was actually just in a meeting, and I'm going back to another meeting this afternoon because we're working on a paper on immigration right now. Let me say, first of all, that I think you cannot get a comprehensive bill through. Bush couldn't get it through when he had Republican control of the House and Senate. Obama couldn't get it through when he had Democratic control of the House and Senate. I think you ought to do one step at a time. So let's start with step number one, which is control the border. I tell every audience, I am committed to controlling the border, and if we don't have enough personnel on the border right now, I would take half the bureaucrats in the Department of Homeland Security in Washington, ship them to Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. We'd have more than enough people to patrol the border and control it. So step one is control the border, made doubly important, I think, because of the conflict underway in Mexico right now with drug dealers. Number two, I think you need to establish English as the official language of government, because we recruit people. Sure. You know, we attract people from all over the planet. It's not just about people coming in from one country or another. But in Chicago schools, over 200 languages are spoken. And English is the single unifying language that enables us to function. Now, again, I often do campaigning in communities, and we just got a report, for example, in a Korean language newspaper. I have every respect for people using their own language as a part of their culture, but for government purposes, I think English ought to be the official language of government. Three, I think every person who becomes a citizen should pass a much more complex test in American history than we currently use, but I also think every young person should pass a test in American history. I mean, I think young Americans, frankly, very often don't know as much about America as first-generation immigrants. Mm. So I think we need to reestablish American history. I wrote a book called A Nation Like No Other and did a movie with my wife, Calista, called A City Upon a Hill, trying to drive home the really important lessons of American history. Number four, we have to have a guest worker program. It has to be sophisticated, and the guest worker card ought to be outsourced to American Express, Visa, or MasterCard. Mm-hmm. Because only they have the technology to avoid fraud. Trying to have the federal government run it would be absurd, and they would do a terrible job.
Right.
Once you establish that, and it ought to be as efficient as your ATM machine or as efficient as you going and charging money at your gas station, the next stage after that would be to have a much enhanced penalty for any employer who hires somebody who's not here legally, because at that point you really have changed the game. I think when you do that, a substantial number of people will leave because they won't have a job. There are people who've been here a long time, who've been obeying the law, who may have come here illegally, you know, 20 years ago, but they're married and have kids and grandkids, and maybe in your local church, there has to be some method, and we're looking at the World War II Selective Service Committees as an example. There has to be some method for those folks to apply for a system of legality. It wouldn't give them citizenship. There would probably be a penalty attached to it, but we would want to bring them within the law once we built this new system. And I think that you would assume that folks who had no ties to America would go home if they didn't have a guest card, but that folks who had real ties to this country would have to find some way to apply for compassionate concern, and we ought to find some way to give them. Somebody suggested the Creeble Foundation said that maybe there should be a red card, and that's for people who have been here. They clearly have to pay a penalty to stay.
Got about 30 seconds.
They're not on a road to citizenship, but they are on a road to coming out from being outside the law.
We're talking today to presidential candidate Newt Gingrich. Sir, if folks want to get information about you, make donations to your campaign, how would they do that again, please?
If they would just go to my first name, newt.org. We'd love to have them come there, see what we're doing, and we'd love to have their support if they'd like to sign up.
We will put the link on the website. Mr. Speaker, thank you so much for being with us. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you.
All right, we're coming up on a